Hello, and thanks for joining us for the 30th episode of Into the Killing. We're back after a short break, so we appreciate your patience. In this episode, we're going to discuss a kidnapping case with a remarkably odd ending. In the early 1980s, Rosemary Levy and her husband, Guillermo Ruiz Bonilla, lived in Burbank, California. They had a daughter, Monica Judith Bonilla, who was born in July 1977. On December 8, 1980, something happened on the other side of the country that had a tremendous effect on the family. Around 10:50 p.m., a 25-year-old loner named Mark David Chapman shot musical legend John Lennon twice in the back and twice in the left shoulder. Chapman was arrested minutes later. Lennon was rushed to the hospital and underwent emergency surgery. Tragically, 40-year-old John Lennon was pronounced dead at 11:15 p.m. Many people around the world were shocked and saddened by the assassination of one of the founders of the Beatles. The murder had a strange effect on Guillermo Ruiz Bonilla. Like many other people, he was devastated, and he cried about the murder for 2 weeks. He then told his wife that the spirit of John Lennon had entered his body. Guillermo lost weight and grew out his hair and his beard in an attempt to look like Lennon. He also bought clothes that Lennon would wear. Guillermo told Rosemary that he wanted her to be Yoko Ono. Rosemary and Guillermo's marriage was already in trouble when he started acting like John Lennon. Rosemary eventually asked him for a divorce. On September 22, 1982, Rosemary went to work. When she returned home, she found their house nearly empty. All the furniture was gone. Even the light fixtures were missing. A wedding photo was left behind and had been slashed. The bride and groom cake topper from their wedding cake had been decapitated. What was most disturbing was that 5-year-old Monica was gone as well. Rosemary tried to report her daughter missing, but she had a problem. Guillermo was Monica's legal guardian. At the time in California, a legal guardian couldn't kidnap their own child. So the police refused to do anything. The day after Rosemary came home to find her house empty, her in-laws called her. They told her she would never see Monica again. They told her that Monica thinks she's dead. 2 months later, Rosemary was awarded full custody of Monica. But it was too late. Guillermo and Monica were gone without a trace. Just over 2 years after Monica was kidnapped, in January 1985, there was a statewide campaign in California that featured two missing girls on the side of milk cartons. It was the first time pictures of missing children were printed on milk cartons in California. One of the girls was Monica. The other was a 13-year-old runaway named Doria Yarbrough. Doria had been missing for about 3 months. Just weeks after the campaign started, Doria returned home to her family. Sadly, the same didn't happen with Monica. Rosemary had no choice but to move on with her life. She eventually remarried and had another child. But she never gave up looking for Monica. She paid $20,000 searching for her. But sadly, neither Monica nor Guillermo were found. It would ultimately take a strange and tragic twist of fate to solve the case. On June 25, 1983, the Marshall family was visiting the Helena National Forest in the Elkhorn Mountains in west central Montana. The family lived in nearby Clancy, Montana. 4-year-old Nyleen K. Marshall was hanging out with some other children without any adults supervising. At one point, the other children turned away and they realized that Nyleen was missing. Nyleen's family and the other families that were there searched for her. Several children said that they saw Nyleen talking to a man in a purple jogging suit and he told her to follow the shadow. The man also couldn't be located. More searches of the area were conducted with dogs and helicopters. The FBI was also brought in to assist on the search. After searching for 10 days, 2,800 searchers found no trace of 4-year-old Nyleen K. Marshall. One theory was that Nyleen wandered off into the wilderness and she was accidentally killed, or she was killed by an animal, or she died after being out in the wilderness for too long. But if that was the case, it was thought that her remains would have been found. Also, Nyleen was barefoot at the time, so it's not believed she could have made it very far on foot. So the police labeled her disappearance a non-family abduction. Nearly 2.5 years later, in November 1985, a man placed several calls to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. He claimed that he had kidnapped Nyleen. Then the calls suddenly stopped. The calls were traced, and they all came from phone booths in Edgerton, Wisconsin. Months later, in January 1986, ChildFind, another missing child organization, received a disturbing typewritten letter. The author said he had kidnapped a girl named Kay from the Elkhorn Park between Helena and Boulder, Montana, which is the area where Nyleen went missing. Apparently, there were details in the letter about Nyleen's disappearance that were never made public. Parts of the letter were made public. The first excerpt reads, "I didn't want their person to try and get information from her. All I could tell them was that she was okay. I hope ChildFind can get the following back to her family. I pick Kay up on the road in the Elkhorn Park area between Helena and Boulder. She was crying and frightened, and as I held her, she was shaking, and I decided I would keep her and love her. I took her home with me. I have a nice investment income, and I can work at home, so I care for her myself all the time. I teach her at home, and she likes to go with me when I travel. Her hair is short and curly now, and she has really grown. She is about 45 inches and around 50 pounds. She has all four of her permanent upper and two of her lower incisors at this time. She takes a bath and brushes her teeth every day. She eats well. Her favorite meal is pizza and cherry." Another excerpt reads, "She would gladly recount trips to San Francisco, New York, Oklahoma City, New Orleans, Nashville, Chicago, Puerto Rico, and Canada. We were even in Britain for a month last year, and she loved it. Nobody questions passports." Finally, a third excerpt reads, "It is, or where it comes from, only that I get it from the bathroom every morning. It is actually a spoonful of my semen. It doesn't affect her physically. I have never molested her in any other way. She's a sweet little girl, and it is because of how much I have grown to love her that I realize how much her family must miss her. But she has adjusted and seems happy. She trusts me and isn't afraid. We play a lot, and she laughs when we clown around. She smiles and acts coy when I tease her. She giggles when we snuggle and hugs me sometimes for no apparent reason. I love her, and I have her. I can't let her go." The postmark of the letter was Madison, Wisconsin, which is just 30 miles from Edgerton. Over the next 6 months, ChildFind received 2 phone calls and 2 more letters from the man claiming to have Nyleen. Both the phone calls and the letters came from the Madison area. The police assumed that the same person made all the phone calls and wrote all the letters, but they aren't sure. They also aren't sure if he kidnapped Nyleen or if it's just a disturbing prank. On November 21st, 1990, the show Unsolved Mysteries, aired a segment about Nyleen Marshall's disappearance. After the show aired, the show's hotline received a call from a teacher in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. He thought that a 12-year-old girl in his class, who went by the name Mary Ann Kelly, might be Nyleen Marshall. Mary's father, Robert, had drawn the attention of a lot of teachers. He would drive her to school every day and then hang out outside the school. He would look in the windows to make sure that she was still in class. When the school asked Robert for their address and phone number, he wouldn't provide them. He would explain that they were between addresses. The FBI started watching Robert and Mary. It turned out that 6 years earlier, they had moved to Point Roberts, Washington, which is a community on the American-Canadian border. Then every day, Robert drove Mary to school in Vancouver. Downtown Vancouver is about 25 miles from Point Roberts. Since it was before 9/11, border security wasn't strict. In December 1990, the FBI raided their home. In a closet, they found a birth certificate. But the birth certificate didn't belong to Nyleen K. Marshall. It was the birth certificate of Monica Judith Bonilla. The FBI quickly concluded that they had found a kidnapped girl, but it wasn't Nyleen. It was Monica Bonilla, who had been missing for just over 8 years. Robert Kelly was actually Guillermo Ruiz Bonilla. He was arrested for parental kidnapping. On December 22, 1990, 12-year-old Monica was reunited with her mother. She also met the 6-year-old half-brother she never knew existed. Monica was asked what she wanted for Christmas, and she replied, "Well, I like a lot of things, an MC Hammer tape. I already have my family." For the first time in 8 years, Rosemary spent Christmas with her daughter. No record could be found as to what happened to Guillermo Ruiz Bonilla after he was arrested. Sadly, no trace of Nyleen Marshall has ever been found. The person who made the calls and wrote the letters has never been identified. In August 1991, a convicted sex offender turned himself in and claimed he had killed Nyleen. The police searched an abandoned mine where he claimed he dumped the body. But no trace of Nyleen was found, and the man was released from custody. Sometime after Nyleen's disappearance, her family moved to Japan. According to the website Lost and Found Blogs, in 1995, the family was planning on moving to Mexico City. Nyleen's mother, Nancy, traveled to Mexico City without the family to look for houses. Tragically, she was found dead in her hotel room. Her hands were bound behind her back, and she was hanging from a shower rod. Her face was also bruised. Her wedding ring and a bottle of perfume were missing. Also, the door to her hotel room had been kicked in. Amazingly, the police labeled her death as suicide. But after some pressure from the family, it was changed to undetermined. No one has ever been arrested for Nancy's murder and is not believed to be connected to Nyleen's disappearance. In 2017, investigators said that they have very little evidence to go on regarding Nyleen's disappearance. They can't even say for sure if Nyleen was kidnapped or she died in the wilderness. So at the time of this recording, her case is hopelessly cold. If Nyleen is alive today, she will be 42 years old. As for Monica Bonilla, according to an internet search, at the time of this video, she is 44 years old and lives in Playa del Rey, California. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. As always, our producer, sound designer, fact checker was Danelle Cloutier. If you just discovered this podcast, please check out our YouTube channel. We have over 300 videos, and most videos feature three strange but true crime stories. You can find it at youtube.com/criminallylisted. Also, if you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe or follow so you don't miss any future episodes. Thanks again for listening. Please stay safe and take care of yourself.